Good Saturday morning to everybody. Welcome to Flashpoint Healthcare Solutions Radio Show, along with Steve Glick, Chief Administrative Officer for Chamber Insurance Trust. I'm Gary Byron. Steve, how are you there, my friend?
Good morning, Gary. How are you?
I tell you, I'm hanging in there over here. You got it. It's a struggle, so I just take it one day at a time. How about yourself?
I feel great. You know, now at least you don't talk to me about Florida. I've been here in Connecticut for a few weeks.
Okay, well, you have been here in Connecticut for a couple weeks, but I got to tell you, you're retaining your suntan from Florida pretty well.
It's jealous. High blood pressure, no.
You're too funny. You've been busy, though, since you've been back. You hit the pavement running, huh?
Yeah, some great things. And just one little hint that I want to share with people is there are many 1099 employees out there, and they've had a hard time finding health care. We have an approval of a program to help 1099 people build affordable health care again. So please call us for any information.
That's right. It's toll-free 800-953-4467. Again, toll-free 800-953-4467 for Chamber Insurance Trust. All right. Do you want to introduce your guest this morning?
I'll be honored to introduce him. Richard Coote is a gentleman that I got to know maybe 25 years ago. Wow. Hard to believe. And he is a wonderful, active member of the greater New Haven community, member of the Chamber of Commerce. But he's also done so many good things in downtown New Haven. And when it comes to management of real estate and other things, he's a person to consider talking to. He's a great man with a great organization. I'm so thrilled to have him on the show.
Well, then let's welcome into the show from the William M. Hotchkiss Company. Let's welcome Richard Coote. Richard, good morning.
Thank you, Gary. Thank you, Steve, for that intro that's going to be tough to live up to. But thank you, Gary. Nice to be on.
It's really our pleasure. I heard many good things. Really quickly, though, before we get into you and what you do, and we'll talk about the real estate market, particularly right now, which I know is very interesting. That in itself could probably take up the entire show. But really quickly, maybe tell us a little bit about the history of the Hotchkiss Company.
Sure. So the William Hotchkiss Company was founded in 1908 William Hotchkiss, who was a gentleman who worked for the New York Railroad and ended up branching off into real estate and then set up in New Haven and started small, but over time, even besides property management and brokerage, added on a insurance arm. And then since its inception, there have been six owners, of which I'm number six, and many of those previous owners were family members of the Hotchkiss family.
All right. So what do you do to the long version here? What's the long version of that story?
So the long version is that, again, in its infancy, it was a company really set up mainly to sell houses and to be involved in the commercial real estate market. And then the property management piece grew and evolved over time. And then again, lastly, that insurance piece, which was short-lived, but nonetheless, you know, when you talk about a full-service real estate company, as we do even today, that includes, you know, again, brokerage, sales, rentals, and property management. So if you really were going to round that out, you would have that insurance piece, which we do not. But William Hotchkiss had it for a number of years. If you saw a picture of him, he would have been like Jim Perkins, the guy on Sunday nights on the Animal Show, sitting at a table smoking a Pall Mall. So he was very much the quintessential, you know, kind of business person at that time who probably could sell ice to an Eskimo. And that's how he started and grew the company. It was in, we're currently in at 195 Church Street, New Haven, but at that time he was set up at 205 Church, which is the building right across the street. Then they were involved with the original construction and fit out of that whole building. And then eventually, again, he moved over next door here to 195 Church.
All right. So I'm going to ask you a little bit of, in a little while, I'm going to ask about commercial real estate. But I right now, I want to know about residential real estate market. Was it just a couple of weeks ago the Feds increased the interest rate by about 0.25%? I hear it's going to go up about 4 more times this year and 3 more times next year. I think they're going to raise it a total of 7 or 8 times just in 2 years. Wow. But then again, in fairness, they've been at record low interest rates. And quite frankly, that's resulted in, I guess, bidding wars for people selling their home. And of course, a lot of this comes down to inventory. But you know this topic certainly more than I and more than a lot of other people. What's happening in the real estate market, the residential real estate market, just to be clear, right now?
Yeah, so to describe it as a boom market would be an understatement. Yeah. And it's been like that now for a couple of years, which really is counterintuitive when you think of it happening, you know, during COVID, during a time that many people are either out of work, not necessarily by their own choice and some by their own choice, but nonetheless, not necessarily gainfully employed and living on assistance instead, that you would think, again, at that time that perhaps one of the biggest hit markets would be real estate. But as you alluded to, the main driver is really the cost of money, and the cost of money has stayed low. And to this day, it's still low. And, you know, if you think about how little what you can't do with your money on an investment standpoint right now to make any money, if you do have available funds, available excessive funds, there's probably no better investment to have it grow than real estate. So, and then conversely on the rental side, you know, because costs for landlords continue to grow in many cases at a staggering rate, you know, those expenses get passed along ultimately to the tenant, so therefore rents are going up. And there's some great programs through CHAFA and FHA to help first-time home buyers buy homes with minimal money down, so a minimal need for income that they can utilize. So I think that whole thing together has essentially gotten us to a place where we are today, and Gary, as you mentioned, you know, locations, everything. But every niche is doing well. You know, the lower end niche relative to condominiums, co-ops, and even smaller type, a ranch home or something that's typically a smaller type building, under 1,500 feet. There's a large contingency of buyers in the market for those type of buildings, and you know, typically you had to see bidding wars to see appraisals come in over and above what the sales price was.
Oh, that's happening a lot. Things,
and those are kinds of things that we saw back in 08 before the crash happened, and so it's just amazing to see that. And then that middle to upper market, you know, where you've got home prices in the 300,000 to 800,000 range, you may not get multiple site visits, and you may not get multiple offers, but nonetheless, the demand in the market is huge, and depending on where you are, generally outweighs the supply, very definitely.
Yeah, well, supply and demand is that's what's causing the bidding wars. I mean, I know somebody who put their house on the market for $320, and they thought that was, you know, they thought maybe that they'd get, you know, 290. They thought it was overpriced, but they did it. They took the advice of their agent, and they're like, well, yeah, if we could get 320, that's great. You know, that's $30,000 more than what I was going to list it for. And they didn't get 320. They got closer to 350. They got 345. And I'm like, well, you were worried about it. You didn't think you were going to get 320. I mean, that's incredible. People are just bidding. They're overbidding, you know, for they're paying more than what the value of the house has been appraised for, you know?
Yeah, well, again, everybody knows how supply is not equal to demand because, you know, they're getting fed listings by their realtor. Mm-hmm. Or they go on Zillow or the free sites and get a good sense of things when they become available. So because that inventory is down, the demand is heightened so much, almost into a frenzy. And then at that point, people are buying far more emotionally than necessary soundly relative to finances. And that's where it comes into play that, you know, it used to be when that people would use a rationale, well, if something was priced at $300,000, first of all, I'm going to get a discount. I have to. I'm never going to pay that much, number one. And number two, I certainly would never pay more than that because I would be worried about getting an appraisal when I went to borrow money because normally appraisers will only appraise a house at whatever the sales price, whatever the contract price is. Now, it's commonplace to have appraisals, again, come in higher than a contract price. And some of that is because if we did a market assessment today and decided a house that we thought a house should go on the market at $400,000 today, so we put it on and take pictures and do all those kinds of things that realtors do. So it's a week out or 2 weeks out or whatever, and the house is finally ready to actually go on the market. The things that can occur in that two-week period are dramatic. So now what we valued something at for $400,000 may be worth $410,000 or $415,000. And when an appraiser goes out to get appraised values and sees other comp sales in the market, they have no problem increasing their appraised value over original asking and in some cases over sales price because they know those values are going up literally daily.
Wow. Do you see, because the feds have already begun to raise interest rates and are going to continue, as I mentioned a little while ago, do you foresee then the homeowners decreasing their asking price? It's already an inflated asking price. I don't mean asking something below market value or below the value of the home. I'm asking below the inflated asking price. Do you think these homeowners who are selling their property will come back down to earth into reality, or do you see it just increasing even more? They've got to take into consideration that, you know, there's only going to be so much people are going to spend, and with the interest rates just continuing to go up, I'm thinking then the asking price is going to have to go down. But you would know more about this than I do.
Well, unlike the petroleum industry, where if there's a breath of a hurricane in the Gulf of Mexico or the other, you know, more serious human problems we have worldwide, where gas prices, you know, adjust immediately to that news, whether they're, you know, the cost of gas changed or not, they're that elastic and flexible. Real estate is not so. So I think in general, people have to get, if we want to call rising interest rates bad news, they need to hear that for a while before they adjust both pricing and even, you know, on the buy side, what they're willing to pay. Because, you know, people, we all do just what we're doing right now, have a conversation about real estate, and you heard your friend who sold it for this much over, and there was a line at the door, and blah, blah, blah. You know, those stories keep going long beyond the Fed raising interest rates today. So that's, you know, the type of thing, and of course, all kinds of other media sources that are going to keep demand and also just the general sales volume intact well beyond a raise in interest rates. But like so many things, over time, if that keeps occurring, and, you know, enough of that is in the media and enough people are saying, wow, yeah, my buddy had 19 people at the door on day one, but I only got five, and, you know, that type of thing, then people are going to adjust accordingly.
Right.
So as a realtor, that's always difficult for us because you need to be able to adjust, you know, the information guidance that you give your clients relative to sales prices. But it's far less immediate than many things relative to change in pricing. And I, you know, we're just in the spring selling season now, mm-hmm. which again, as we've been talking about, is still on fire. And I personally, you know, my crystal ball works well 75% of the time, but I think, you know, hopefully that stays intact, at least into the fall. And then, you know, typically winter things tend to quiet down anyways, and I don't know if that'll be more of a reckoning period or not. Also of interest is, you know, raw land. And first of all, again, low inventory, so hard to find. But people are more hesitant now to necessarily build new because of availability of raw product like lumber and even metal and windows and appliances. in the costs, which have skyrocketed in the last 6 and 8 months, and the supply chain, you know, stuff's just not available. So even that part of the real estate market may not quite be what it was pre-pandemic. Mm-hmm. So again, that effectively puts more people into looking to buy, you know, existing homes. So I just don't see a huge change in that, certainly in the next 6 months.
Yeah, to build, I mean, cost of lumber, I mean, it wouldn't, I don't know, you'd probably lose your shirt. I mean, there's only so much people are going to buy a house for, but it's what it would cost you to make it from scratch. If you bought a plot of land, you know, and then built your own home, right now, with cost of supplies are just skyrocketing.
They are. And again, supply is crazy. And you'll see on most builders' contracts now, they'll give you a price based on when they think construction will occur. But there's always that caveat of, you know, holding you responsible, you the buyer, you the end user, responsible for, you know, major price increases. And in fairness to builders, they had to do that because that's the only way they could be protected. But no, it's such a volatile thing right now that, again, there are far less people looking to build and far more looking for to buy, you know, product that's finished, so to speak.
Richard, you had mentioned something a moment ago. I think you had mentioned Zillow and, I don't know, like maybe Realtor.com. Or something. Are there different homes on the MLS that you had that you, as an insider, that you get than what's advertised on Zillow and Realtor and some of the other consumer-based?
Generally not. You know, when you put up a listing on MLS, there's 5 boxes you can check, such as Realtor.com, such as Zillow, Trulia, that you're giving permission for your listing to go on there. And there's really no reason not to do that because it expands your footprint. So it only makes sense. What does happen is as you grow as a realtor and develop relationships, which as in so many industries, you know, in real estate, relationships are everything. Oftentimes you may get a call with a listing from a client, a prior client, et cetera. And, you know, if you have buyers in your back pocket, so to speak, you may do what's, you know, reach out to them directly with a listing before you publish on a multiple listing. Mm-hmm. Obviously, just then, you know, that hopefully you're dealing directly with a buyer as opposed to dealing with another realtor where you're splitting commissions. So that's called a pocket listing where, again, it doesn't necessarily get on multiple listing right away. Well, if it doesn't get on multiple listing, chances are it's not going to get on the other sites, the Zillow and the Trulias, unless you're for sale by owner, in which case it's not going to be on multiple listing. You're just trying to sell it on your own with our realtor, and you're posting it on Zillow and Trulia. But, you know, in summary, the majority of things that go on multiple listing are on those other sites as well.
Folks, you are listening to Flashpoint Healthcare Solutions Radio Show along with Steve Glick, Chief Administrative Officer for Chamber Insurance Trust. I'm Gary Byron. Our guest this morning is from the Hotchkiss Company, William M. Hotchkiss Company, down in New Haven, Richard Coote. You can contact him, real estate, 203-285-8603. Again, 203-285-8603. Moving away from residential real estate, let's talk a little bit about commercial real estate because they're having the opposite problem where there's a lot of businesses that are, let's quite frankly have gone out of business since the onset of COVID, or they have downsized their office space. Because there's a lot of people who are working from home, and they don't need all of that area that they used to once occupy. Let's talk about what's happening with commercial real estate, Richard.
Sure. And when we talk about commercial, we're really looking at certainly the office market, Gary, that you just mentioned. There's also the retail market, you know, everything from shopping centers to single freestanding stores. And then there is industrial in other facets of the commercial market. But our main focus, and as you just alluded to, in commercial leasing for, you know, office, that's a pretty good barometer of what's happening in general in the commercial industry. And you're absolutely right. What's happened has been, again, probably unprecedented in time, but, you know, many people entered, you know, 2 years ago in March into that time frame having no prior knowledge of what was to come. So couldn't be a lot of pre-planning, but instead it was all reactive. You know, what are we going to do with our staff? How can we work remotely? We can't have everybody come into our office, blah, blah, blah. At the same time, you know, the commitments for that space through leases are generally long-term, you know, at least 3 to 5 years. Mm-hmm. They are not fluid and flexible as turning on and off whether your staff comes to work or not. So while those decisions, again, immediately had to be made about who was going to be in your space, if anybody, then you were saddled with that space after the fact because you had a lease commitment to it. So I think a lot of people at that point took a wait and see, and as we all did, who would know 2 years later we're still in the situation we're in, because 2 years ago the hope was, oh yeah, this will be short term, maybe 6 months we'll be back, blah, blah, blah. And that didn't happen. So as time evolved, then it became more of a strategic plan of, okay, well, clearly, you know, we're either going to live with this model of everybody working from home or a hybrid where some come to the office and some are working remotely, whatever it might be. But that, of course, had to change thinking relative to the brick and mortar space that's leased. So now as time goes by and lease renewals or the potential for them come up, the thought more and more is, yeah, do I need as much space as I've had? Do I need any space at all? Or, you know, if you're fortunate and you happen to have a business that has thrived in the last couple of years, do I need more space? I can tell you firsthand, I don't see a lot of that, but here in New Haven, biotech has gotten quite big, and the demand is strong, and people need, in some cases, more space, especially in opportunity zones and what's available. But again, that isn't necessarily the norm.
But if somebody wanted to buy an investment piece, you know, like a 3 or 4 unit, like a mini strip, you know, a commercial strip, not a huge plaza anchored by a big Y supermarket, but just a little, I don't know, a little commercial investment piece. I would imagine right now they're a lot less than what they would have been just 5 years ago, right?
Yes, I agree. Because again, retail is, you know, some of the hardest hit during the pandemic. And I think, you know, typically in the model you just talked about, without a huge anchor type store, you have smaller tenants with smaller income, smaller leases, and they're the tenants who typically are going to either walk away first or maybe not renew if their lease comes up. So finding a small strip center that's 100% leased may not be easy, number one, mm-hmm. and that brings down value. And then number two, if you do find a place that you feel like you can lease out some of the retail space there, it takes time, and that time costs money. So ultimately, that is going to possibly drive down the value of it. It's, in retail, there are so many variables, but you know, some of the main things, of course, are location.
Yeah.
And then somebody looks at a strip center like that and says, okay, well, 3 out of 4 spaces are leased, and the 3 out of 4 are strong type retail operations in any market, you know, convenience store, alcohol, nails, hair, those kinds of things that tend to stand the test of time. And the fourth one was a realtor, you know, mm-hmm. or some type of office that they could consolidate, and now it's empty. So I think when you evaluate something like that, you're always looking for the strength of the existing tenants, obviously the income side to determine what price makes sense, and then ultimately capital needs for the building and those kinds of things. Sure. But yes, to answer your question, Gary, absolutely.
And I would imagine these are like triple cap leases, many of them. And you're right. I mean, you want to make sure that you have a good anchor in there so that there's some longevity in there. That'll also draw more consumers into the lot. You know, you get a Dunkin' Donuts or a Subway in there. You know, that's going to draw more cars in the parking lot. Really quickly, just because I'm running out of time, could you give us some property management tips for spring and summer? I would be remiss if I didn't ask you that final question, but I only have about a minute and a half, so or 2 minutes maybe.
Sure. Well, we manage all forms of real estate, from single-family homes to large office buildings statewide. And, you know, what we have found over time is, like so many other facets of our life, we need to be proactive rather than reactive to the extent we can. So smart capital planning about big things, parking lots, siding, air conditioning, you know, putting money in reserve so you have money to do those kinds of things, mm-hmm. and equally important, preventative maintenance, you know, filter changes and checkups and taking care of the outside of a building and not let it get to such a bad point. Same with roofs. Fix them and take care of them before you need to replace them. Because like we just talked about, supplies and construction costs are crazy. So just try to follow that rule of thumb and be proactive, and financially it will pay itself great dividends.
It's good to have a few extra bucks in an escrow account for those just-in-case situations. I want to bring in or bring back in Steve Glick into the conversations. Steve.
What an important statement that Richard has brought to our community. And keep up the good work, Richard.
Richard, I would imagine this is a busy time of year for you too, right? Now that we're here in April and people are out and about more as opposed to being secluded in their home during the winter.
Between real estate sales and brokerage, and our business is very weather-driven on the property management side. So, you know, we get through winter. Winter's busy. In the heat of summer, it's very busy. So those middle months, spring and fall, we look forward to a little quieter on the property management side. But you know what? In our business, Gary, we never want the phone to stop ringing.
Ah, great point and good answer. Let me give you some points of contacts for Richard Coote and the William M. Hotchkiss Company, he is the president of. It's online at www.wmmhotchkiss.com. Again, wmmhotchkiss.com. It's exactly how it's said. And as far as the phone number is concerned, you can reach him at 203-285-8603. Again, 203. Write this down. 203-285-8603. And as far as our good old buddy Steve Glick is concerned, well, you can find him online at CITRUST.com. Again, www.CITRUST.com. And toll free at 800-953-4467. Again, toll free at 800-953-4467. Really appreciate our guests from the William M. Hotchkiss Company, Richard Coote, for Steve Glick, Chief Administrative Officer for Chamber Insurance Trust. I'm Gary Byron. Thank you so much for listening to Flashpoint Healthcare Solutions Radio Show. Until next Saturday morning, have a good one, everybody. So long.